there.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, I was just looking at a picture during the break of 10 of my 11 kids. They're all grown up now. Most of them, well, many of them with kids of their own. And we had this wedding yesterday. So my granddaughter got married. And it was just marvelous fun and wonderful. And Cyrus, I shot you a picture of the fam.
This is incredible. And these sons of yours look so much like you. It's uncanny.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, for my sake, but I think they are good-looking lads. Maybe I'll post a picture of this. So this is 10 of my 11 children. My daughter, Madeline, she's not in the picture because she just had her third child. So she wasn't there for the festivities, but all the other ones were. And they're looking happy, aren't they?
This is, yeah, you can't help but smile seeing a family together like this. That's great. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely.
You got to post this.
You think so? Yeah, maybe
yes,
I will.
Definitely.
Maybe I'll do that. Okay. I'll do that on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. That's a way to reach me, by the way. If you want to send me a message on Twitter, I'll look for it there, at Patrick Madrid. You can email me by going to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, and click on Connect. And lastly, you can call me, which is probably the very best way for us to talk right away, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Patrick in Trenton, New Jersey. Good morning, Patrick.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Happy Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, thank you.
I just have a question regarding graces. I kind of get a little confused by the different kinds of graces, like sanctifying graces. What is the difference between sanctifying graces and just regular grace? Now, could you receive sanctifying graces by reading the Bible, let's say?
Well, let's break it down. First of all, sanctifying grace is, the church would describe it in terms like this, that it's the very life of God himself that is communicated to our souls. And the par excellence way of God communicating his grace to your soul is through the sacraments. So it's not the only way, but it's the primary way. So when you receive Holy Communion worthily, when you go to confession or receive any of the sacraments, it increases, it either introduces, or if you're in the state of mortal sin, it reintroduces sanctifying grace, or it intensifies, and you might say, St. Paul uses the term that the love of God is poured out into our hearts. He uses an analogy of liquid. It's not liquid. It's not like there's a certain volume there, per se, but it can be intensified and strengthened, and if you want to think of it as expanded, it can have that same effect. Now, another kind of grace, and this might be where you're wondering about the two, another kind of grace is called actual grace. Now, actual graces come to you in the form of maybe, like you said, reading the Holy Bible, praying the rosary, making the sign of the cross, genuflecting in front of the tabernacle, blessing yourself with holy water. These are sacramentals, not sacraments. But when you use sacramentals or you receive a blessing from a priest, that too is a sacramental. It's not a sacrament. These kinds of graces are external to you. They're sometimes called actual graces, or signal graces is another term. And what they do is they help to dispose your mind, well, more specifically, your soul. But through your mind, it helps to dispose you to be more receptive to sanctifying grace. So they have a contributing effect. But they themselves are not sanctifying grace. Think of it this way. Sanctifying grace is in you. It's in your soul. It's what the Lord is doing in your soul. Actual graces are graces that God sends you as prompts or helps or reminders or nudges or, you know, little movements of grace that will help you be more disposed to receive sanctifying grace. So that'd probably be the most basic distinction between those two kinds of grace. And if you think of it that way, then you realize that when you do receive from the sacraments, as an example, an intensification of sanctifying grace, maybe it is that many of these other actual graces were helping you get to that point. So take, for example, you know, maybe when you were praying the rosary and you had a deep desire well up inside you to go to confession, And it's not that you necessarily had any mortal sins, but you just had a deep desire to be closer to the Lord. Well, the actual grace from praying the rosary was nudging you to go receive sanctifying grace in the sacrament. Does that clarify it a bit better?
Yes, thank you so much. It does.
You're welcome. Yeah, this is a topic that we could never fully exhaust. Grace ultimately is God's gracious favor to us. It's his love for us, and he communicates that love in various ways. Thank you. Let's go now to Linda in Portland, Maine. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Patrick. My question is about, my husband's been asking about the drying up of the Euphrates River. Mm-hmm. And what that could mean. He's seen some stuff online or heard about it at work. Mm-hmm. And is concerned.
And is he concerned? How is it that he's concerned about that?
Well, with everything else going on in the world, kind of, you know, that this is another sign that, you know, quote unquote, the end is near.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's well, concern for our kids and their future, and apparently the river, you know, if you look at the news, within the next 20 years or so, the river will be dried up.
Okay. I had not heard about that, but personally, I don't see it in that any kind of a portent because, well, first of all, the Euphrates River runs through Iraq, modern-day Iraq, which is notoriously arid, and I would have to think that from time to time, these mighty rivers, they ebb and flow. So sometimes they're maybe down to a trickle. Sometimes they're robust. But in itself, that doesn't really mean anything. There's no prophecy that I'm aware of that says that when you see the Euphrates River begin to dry up, know that the end is near. Jesus, for example, never says anything about that. So I would simply regard that as a natural phenomenon. Maybe there's some man-made cause behind it. Who knows? I don't know. But there's no reason to see in that some sort of portent of the end. And maybe the thing to do, if your husband is wound up about this, would be to remind him of what Jesus said. He says, you know, let tomorrow take care of itself. You know, there's plenty of worry today. You don't have to worry about tomorrow. And by worrying, you can't change anything anyway. And you can't change the color of a hair on your head if you're worried about things. So he says, don't worry. Just, you know, be prayerful. Do what you're supposed to do. Love God with all your heart, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Receive the sacraments. Give alms. Be a good husband. Be a good wife. You know, whatever your state in life is. And if you're doing those things, then who cares if the Euphrates River dries up or not? And if it does dry up, and if that is a portent of things to come, well, you're alive at a time that God wants you to be alive. So if,
right.
And this is, I think, the message we should all really gravitate toward is that let's take a worst case scenario, Linda, and let's say that all these things are portents, that the end is near. And let's say that the Antichrist is among us now and all kinds of crazy nonsense is going to start happening. Okay, fair enough. And if I happen to be alive during that time and you happen to be alive during that time, this is God's plan. And he has a reason for us to be here now. And let's just figure out how best we can live out God's providence. So it's not something that people should lose their peace over. They shouldn't worry and become obsessed with it. Now, I don't know if your husband is doing that, Linda, but I do know some people who do. I do know some people who feed on a steady diet of so-called end times prophecy, some of which may be authentic, some of which may just be spurious, but they get so obsessed with this stuff that they wind up missing out on the important things in life, like doing what you're called to do, because they're so busy checking the websites and they're so busy watching the YouTube videos and they're so busy. Oh, did you hear this? Here's another thing that this person said. And they get so paralyzed and sidelined and in some cases frightened that they stop doing what the Lord is calling them to do because they're eating the steady diet of end time stuff. And that's not healthy. And it's not what the Lord is calling us to.
Right. So what would you say if they start going down that road? What's your best advice?
Well, if at the risk of sounding redundant, I would say, what did Jesus say? If you wish to, he was asked by this rich young man, if you wish to enter into life, he said, good master, what must I do to enter life, enter, you know, heaven? And Jesus says, if you wish to enter into eternal life, keep the commandments. He doesn't say, spend all your waking hours looking at prophetic statements to see if one thing is happening. He says, when you see these signs, you'll know that the end is near. But the signs that Jesus talks about have nothing to do with the drying up of the Euphrates River. So in the meantime, to repeat, I would say, love God with all your heart, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
Give alms.
Right.
Be a good father. Be a good husband. You know, do all the things right. that the Lord is asking you to do. Watch and pray. Receive the sacraments. Be faithful. Be hopeful. Be joyful. And if you find that you have a sort of morose delectation for the doom and gloom prophets, even if what they're prophesying happens to be true, but if it derails you from what you're supposed to be doing, then it's not good for you. Better that you just focus on what you can do and pray and leave the rest in God's hands, seems to me.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome, Linda. I appreciate your phone call. And I suspect that there are more than a few people out there who are just living lives of quiet desperation because they've become so fearful and nervous and anxious because of these websites and videos and things of that nature that, while in themselves may convey some truth, I don't deny that there may be some truth there, but, you know, people have different reactions to that. They have different reactions to that. And for some people, they can handle that and it's not a big deal and they can stay balanced. But some people, they get off balance. So know yourself, know your limits, and don't put yourself in a situation where it's going to be eating away at you and causing you to be off balance, I guess the best way I can put it. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Mike in Turlock, California, that is. Hello, Mike.
Hey, can you explain the overturning of Roe versus Wade for me? I'm not too familiar with it. And then can you also explain how, it as Catholics, can we or how do we combat trying to get rid of being taxed to contribute to these Planned Parenthood places?
Okay, so those are two separate questions. I'll take them in order. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a legal scholar or anything approaching that, so I can only tell you my understanding of this. But in the early part of this year, the Supreme Court, they heard a case called Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. And you can read about it on the blog from the Supreme Court. So if you want to read that whole case, it's scotusblog.com, scotusblog.com. And on that blog, it gives the whys and wherefores of the different cases that the Supreme Court hears. You can also go to the Supreme Court itself website, supremecourt.gov. So just to summarize, this is a case that was brought before the Supreme Court that the majority opinion, which was leaked, it was written by Justice Alito. It ruled that the abortion side of the case was in the wrong, and so it wound up effectively meaning the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Now, I'll have to leave it to the legal scholars and those who know the law well to be able to explain it in a more nuanced way. That's just sort of my dumbed down basic understanding of it. But there's more there. And if you read the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case, you'll see some of those nuances. Suffice to say that if indeed this has the effect of overturning Roe versus Wade, and it appears as though it's going to have that effect, then this will take this back to the states. And so we'll have this crazy patchwork quilt of states in which you've got the crazy states like California and New York and a few others, the cold-hearted, ruthless, sure, it's okay to kill unborn human being states, who will have enshrined in their state law the right, quote-unquote, to have an abortion. Then you're going to have the good states and the sane states that are good-hearted and recognize that it is wrong to take the life of an innocent person. And in those states, it will be either entirely illegal to have an abortion, or it will be so restricted as to be effectively illegal. And taking the 50 states, the slight majority of the states that are on the side of making it illegal or effectively illegal on the basis of the restrictions, they're in the majority. Now, it's not to say it's in the majority in terms of the population, because population centers in California and New York are vastly disproportionate to, say, Oklahoma or even a larger state like Ohio or Florida. But the preponderance of states in the number of about, say, 28, 29 are going to be no on abortion. And the rest of the states, to greater or lesser extents, are going to be yes on abortion. So as I understand it, once the Supreme Court effectively overturns Roe versus Wade, it goes back to becoming a state issue. Now, the second thing you asked about was, if I remember correctly, how do you avoid participating in giving money to big abortion? I think you mentioned Planned Parenthood. And are you tying it into our taxes and how much money the federal government gives to Planned Parenthood?
Yes. I mean, we're kind of forced to give away our taxes, and we don't believe in this.
Yes, that's true. And it is one of those egregious infringements upon your right to avoid participating in something that is immoral, which abortion is. So there is something called a Mexico City policy, and this is something that it changes from one administration to another. So the Mexico City policy is... It's thwarted by the Democrats, and it's revived by the Republicans. And it just simply says that there will not be federal funds used for abortion and abortion-related activities. Now, there's much more to it, but it was intended as a way to prevent the federal government from making use of federal tax dollars to support abortion in foreign lands, but to some extent also here in the United States. There's an effect there as well. The Hyde Amendment is another one. So the Hyde Amendment doesn't deal with foreign use of money, but it has to do with the use of tax money here. Now, this is one of those ping pong ball things, as it appears to me, where when a Democratic administration comes in, they turn on the abortion money spigot. When a Republican administration comes in, they turn off the abortion money spigot. You and I are caught in the middle. And so you and I are forced at some times and not forced at other times to donate indirectly some of our money to big abortion. And it's a terrible thing, and it's an imposition on people like you and me. But for the moment, at least politically, it doesn't seem to be something that we can opt out of. It's required, and that's just what the government does.
Okay. Hey, Patrick, really quick, as a conservative Catholic, I'm curious, who do you want to see run for president?
I have no earthly clue right now. I really don't know. I would love to see some candidate, man or woman, who would just really rise to the top, but I just, at this point, I no clue. I'm keeping my eyes open, though, but thus far, I haven't seen the person that really strikes me that way.
All right, thanks.
You got it, Mike. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. Trying to stay far away from politics if we possibly can. 888-914-9149. I'm going to give you an update on that horrendous, racist-motivated shooting of black people at a grocery store in Buffalo. Terrible tragedy. I'll tell you a little bit more about that when we come back. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
At the intersection of faith and culture, the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, 888-914-9149. This takes a lot of effort. I'm burning a lot of calories in my facial muscles right now, Cyrus.
You have done very well. That was good. That might have been your best one yet.
It's hard. It's hard not to laugh. Okay, I'm trying to suppress. Okay, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Suzanne now, in Leesburg, Virginia. Hi, Suzanne. Hi, Suzanne. Don't be shy.
Hi, Patrick. Hi. My husband volunteers quite a bit, and I support and admire that. And this has never occurred before, but last night he, in a volunteer capacity, ended up being just he and another woman alone for several hours, which bothered me a lot. And I'm just wondering if it's reasonable to, ask that he doesn't do that. And if so, how would I approach that conversation with him?
Yeah. Well, it's not unreasonable, that's for sure. And you as his wife, you have a claim on him. You know, it's part of the marriage contract that the two of you entered into. And that contract includes fidelity, exclusivity, etc. And I know you already know this, but just to rehearse it in your own mind, it's not unreasonable for you to, if you sense that there's something untoward that could happen, to say, hey, I don't want you doing that. You know, so if it has reached the point where you're concerned about the possibility that they might become physically involved or emotionally involved, you have every right to say so. And so you would not be doing anything wrong by doing that, just as he would have the same right. So if the situation were reversed and you were the woman who was there and another man was volunteering and you're spending hours alone together in the same place, your husband has every right to say, I don't like that. And that makes me uncomfortable and I don't want you to do that. And he would have that right. So you do too. Now, without going into any gory details or anything, is there anything about this situation that makes you think it's more likely to be a problem? I mean, are they alone in a private office or are they out in the public somewhere? Or are they visible to other people, or are they by themselves in a room where there's nobody else there?
It was some inside and outside, but not with other people.
So, okay. So it's a volunteering situation that's got the two of them doing whatever, and there's nobody else there, just the two of them.
Right.
Okay. That's not a good situation, especially, I mean, assuming that they're not elderly. You sound young, so assuming that your husband's not 80 and he's, you know, volunteering with an 80-year-old woman, the likelihood, or let's just put it this way, the possibility of falling into something that would be inappropriate is there. That's a built-in possibility when you get two people who are younger and they're alone together. It's just human nature. It's just the way it is. So when you've brought it up to your husband, if you've brought it up to him, what has his reaction been?
Well, I haven't brought it up to him because I am concerned that he'll, you know, accuse me of not trusting him when really my concerns are more what you're saying. Just it would apply to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I have heard of some men, specifically, I remember publicly, you know, Mike Pence, it's like he just had this thing where, you know, he just would never be alone with another woman to protect mm-hmm. his marriage. Mm-hmm. And so that's more the angle I'm coming from, but I'm concerned if I don't say it in the right way, my husband's going to think I'm accusing him. And I'm not specifically mm-hmm. concerned. I don't know the other woman. I don't know what her intentions are.
How old are the two of them, if you don't mind my asking?
Very well, but sorry.
How old is your husband and how old do you think she is?
My husband is 60 and I don't know. I know, all I know is she has a young adult daughter.
Okay. So chances are she could be 60, she could be younger for that matter. But, well, I mean, your instincts are sound, and there's nothing wrong with you being concerned about this. And if you've seen or felt something that caused you to be more concerned, you have a right to put an end to it. Now, hopefully he will say, you know what, you come first, honey, I love you, and if this makes you uncomfortable, I'm not going to do it. You know, that's the the best response. It's the right response, if you ask me. And in the same way, you could maybe, in a conversation with him, say, well, what if the situation were reversed? And what if I were spending a lot of time alone with a man? And you were uncomfortable with that, and you told me so. Not that you're accusing me of anything. But if you're uncomfortable with that and you say, I don't want you, my wife, to be spending lots of alone time with another man, I just don't want it. Wouldn't you want me to say, okay, honey, I put you first. You're more important to me than anything or anyone else. So if that makes you uncomfortable, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to make you not feel that way. Wouldn't you want me to treat this that way if it were you? I'll bet he'd say yes, you know. So what you're asking about is not unreasonable. And furthermore, as all of human history will testify, this is how those things generally tend to happen, especially if they're innocuous in the first place. And I'm not trying to alarm you, Suzanne. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to, you know, raise your level of consternation any higher than it already may be. But just all other things being equal, this is how people wind up getting together. Because they're in the circumstances where it's easier to get together, and they often do. And that's not good. What do you think?
Okay, you're saying exactly what I was thinking. So thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that, and I will just have to, you know, take a chance and hope he reacts in that way.
So. You know, we have, I'll just share this with you for what it's worth. Here at Relevant Radio, we have on the books, it's something called a prudence policy. It's not something we really talk about publicly, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about it publicly. It is just a policy on the books here for all people who work at Relevant Radio, myself included, Father Rocky, Drew Mariani, all of us. We all are subject to this. Is that men and women who work at Relevant Radio cannot be alone together. So one man and one woman. So if I was, you know, going to some meeting, say in Chicago, and a female colleague is coming to Chicago at the same time, and we're both, you know, one of us is going to rent a car and then drive to the office, we can't go together if it's just the two of us. If you're going to have a meeting, and there's going to be some other situation that doesn't involve like windows and open spaces where other people can walk by and see what's going on, you can't be alone together. You know, you can't go have dinner together. And the reason is not because there's anybody at Relevant Radio that anybody's worried about. It's not that at all. But we're all human beings. And so men and women have a tendency to go in that direction under the right circumstances. So the prudence policy is simply just never have that circumstance. If you never have that circumstance, you're not going to have that problem. And that's wise, if you ask me. And that's really all you're saying to your husband is, let's be prudent. And let's not put ourselves in a situation where, you know, one thing leads to another, and then we've got a big mess on our hands. Nobody wants that.
Right. Okay.
And then there's one other thing, if I may, not to overly extend this, but it's an important topic. And that's the issue of scandal. And even if there's nothing happening, this is the other thing too, even if there's nothing happening, if it gives the appearance that something might be happening, that's a form of scandal. And what did Jesus say? He said, you know, scandals will come, but woe to that man by whom scandals come. So for our part, what we should do is try to avoid giving scandal. Even if you're not doing anything wrong, if it's doing something in a way that needlessly could cause people to murmur and wonder and whisper. Remember that scandal from the Greek word eskandalon, it means a stumbling block. It means you trip and fall because you stumble over it. So in the case of scandal, especially of this kind, even if there's nothing going on between the two of them, it's sufficient that you as the wife have this reaction, but maybe there are other people too who might be thinking, you know, we spent a lot of time together. I wonder what's going on over there. Okay. That's not good. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. I feel... My heart goes out to you because I can imagine that this is really troubling for you. And I'm hopeful that maybe when you talk with your husband and talk it through and maybe raise some of these points with him. Hopefully he'll see what you're saying and he'll do the right thing and say, okay, honey, absolutely. He doesn't need to volunteer. He doesn't need to volunteer there. He doesn't need to volunteer doing that thing, whatever it is he's volunteering for. He can do other things. So you have my deep empathy, Suzanne, and let's hope that nothing further happens and he'll just say, you know what? You're right, honey. I'll stop doing that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Suzanne. They used to call that women's intuition. Maybe they still do. I don't know. But intuitions are sometimes wrong, but they're often right. So if you sense that there's something, something's not quite right here, don't ignore it. And for that matter, as long as I'm on the topic, slightly different scenario here. But how about online activity? How about, Facebook, etc.? There is an article. I'm going to pull it up right here. It's on my blog. Here's how you can get to it. Just go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. And beneath where it says The Patrick Madrid Show, you'll see where it says links. And if you click on the top link there, it'll take you right there. And you'll see this article front and center. But the article is titled, If You're Married and You're on Facebook, You Should Read This. Now, I posted this 7 years ago. So actually, I posted it originally 11 years ago, now that I look at it. But I updated it. And it starts off here. Now, this again, when I posted it in 2011, these were the statistics that were current at that time. And I'm sure that the statistics have only grown in the ensuing years since then. A survey of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers found that Facebook is cited as evidence in 66% of divorce cases in the United States. Also, more than 80% of divorce lawyers reported that they have seen an increase in the number of cases using social networking evidence during the past few years. So those lawyers who are involved in the dissolution of marriages and divorce, they find, and this is 11 years ago, mind you, that especially activity on Facebook had a lot to do with marriages breaking up. And I point out, this may even underestimate the extent to which Facebook, like other useful and entertaining new medium communication platforms, are contributing to marital infidelity and other marriage problems. I really encourage you to read this article, because in it, for my part at least, I put what I consider to be some really wise rules. Talk about a prudence policy, some wise rules when it comes to how to govern your online life and what you can do to help prevent a disaster from happening in your marriage. So I'll just kind of quickly race through them, but if you want to read it, you can go to the show page and just click on that link. So number one, your Facebook should be a completely open book for your husband or wife. Now, this, by the way, it talks about Facebook, but this could be Instagram. It could be a messenger service. It could be private messaging. It could be any of those things, but I'm just using Facebook as an example here. You need to password protect your marriage. That means that your husband or wife should be able to log into your Facebook account or any other social media account at a moment's notice, at any time of the day or night, especially when you're not there. That's a key thing right there. She shouldn't have to be only able to log into your information if you're standing right there watching her. You should, if you're on a business trip, if you're wherever, it doesn't matter, your wife should be able to access any and all of your social media accounts. Now, if you're planning a surprise party for somebody, that's different. You know, so you can keep a little secret like that. But if you're keeping your interactions with members of the opposite sex online a secret, then you've got a real problem on your hands. So what I propose here is your wife should know your password and you should know your wife's password to all of your accounts. Second rule. Now, there's more to it in each case, but I'll just kind of skip over. Second rule is don't flirt on Facebook, not even a little bit. Things that you might consider harmless could actually be a stumbling block of temptation for somebody else. It happens. What you think of as completely innocuous or friendly could be misconstrued. And you know what that's like, right? Have you ever said something completely innocuous, but somebody picked up on it as you were being snarky or mean? That happens. And it can happen in the other direction, too. Also, don't waste time on Facebook or other social media. It's a huge time suck. I heard that from Cyrus, and I think it's a great way of talking about it. Just before you know it, a lot of time may have gone by, and what do you have to show for it? So these are some of the things that I propose, and you can read all of them. Check it out. And the way to get to it again is go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, click on where it says links, and then click on the very top link, and you'll be right there and you'll see it. It's called, If You're Married and You're on Facebook, You Should Read This. All right, Taco Tuesday and all that, plus some Taco Tuesday music and your phone calls right after this quick timeout. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Now that's what I call a taco.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
That's right.
We do it in Mexico all the time.
That's right. Man, I want that on my karmic record. 888-914-9149. Cynthia in Coolidge, Arizona. It's nice to have you on the program. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Patrick and Cyrus. I just wanted to comment about the Facebook thing. My husband and I, he was in the military, and we both had one when we were, you know, first married and stuff, and it almost ruined our marriage, and I can completely see where that article is legitimate, so we made the decision to get rid of our Facebook and be happier with it. We're going on 10 years now, and we are completely happy.
Smart. Very smart. So let me ask you this. Who raised the alarm first? Your husband about your activities or you about his activities?
It was me about his activities. Mm-hmm. I had noticed him talking to some former friends of his and saying things that I did not like. And it really hurt me. And it was get rid of the Facebooks as an ultimatum, and we have both been better since then.
That is awesome. So at first there was a little bit of friction, a little bit of defensiveness, but he said, you know what, you're more important to me than Facebook, and things got better.
Yep. Actually, it wasn't even friction getting rid of it. It was we talked about it, and he deleted it right in front of me with no problems.
Love it. That is so good to hear because, you know, there are a lot of people, you probably know some people maybe for whom social media is a real threat to their marriage, you know, when one spouse or the other is carrying on kind of a secret life or a background life. It's just like a termite or termites eating away at the marriage. Very destructive.
It really is, and thank you. Have a great day. And people tell us all the time, well, you should get a Facebook, or this was done on Facebook. And I was like, no, we are so much happier. You guys should not determine that we have to have a Facebook for social standards when we're happier without it.
Yes. Well, I'm so happy to hear that. This is a story that, you know, hopefully a lot of people are hearing right now, and it will give them hope if they're having a similar issue in their own marriage. I'll tell you a story. This is a couple that I know personally. I've known them for a long time. And her maiden name is the same as his name. So when she got married, her name didn't change. So when Facebook sort of got going, this might have been maybe 15 years ago. He told me the story. He told me what happened. She gets on Facebook in order to like see family pictures and communicate with, you know, family and kids at college, that kind of thing, entirely innocent, nothing more to that. Literally within an hour after she had started her account with her name, she gets a message from like an old college or high school boyfriend who says, oh, hey, you're on Facebook. And he starts trying to sweet talk her on Facebook. And he was searching for her. How else would he find her? How else would he know? He was typing her name, and he was searching for her, and he found her. So she told her husband, and so they just simply changed the account. I think they changed the first name to his name, but she blocked him, and that was the end of that. But there are these old flames out there who are rummaging around looking. And that was one of those stories that really stuck out in my mind. So obviously they didn't have any problem with it, but they handled it right up front and got rid of the potential for that to happen. Well, Cynthia, I'm happy for you. I really am. And in just a moment, I'm going to post the article that I shared on, and this will be on my Twitter page. I'm sorry, yeah, my Twitter page. I have Facebook on the brain right now. So my Twitter page will have the article directly here in just a minute. It's at Patrick Madrid. Let's go to Deanna now in Morgan City, Louisiana. Is it Deanna or Dina?
Deanna.
Hi, Deanna. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I feel starstruck, so bear with me.
Oh, well, don't feel that way.
I appreciate you taking the call.
You're welcome, yes.
Yes, I was just curious. outside St. Monica and St. Augustine, I have an adult son who professed to one of my other children that he believes in God, but not religion.
Okay.
And I've been praying quite a bit about it, but I'm not sure quite how I should wrap my head around it and how I should address it, or as a mother, you know, I don't want to be confrontational.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a right to not only care about what he's doing, but also to comment upon it, because you're his mom, so you have standing to do that. So maybe if you can gently discuss with him, what are his reasons for maybe backing away from religion? You raised him Catholic, right? Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, I did. But his father was Baptist.
Okay.
So, you know, it wasn't just my influence.
Is he reacting negatively toward the Baptist side of things, or is it just God in general that he's backing away from?
No, I think it's the, unfortunately, it's the Catholic establishment. We're estranged from each other currently.
You and your husband?
I'm going through a divorce.
Okay.
Yeah, son and my husband and a few of our other children. So, yeah.
Okay.
But that doesn't stop me from praying for them, of course.
Right. Obviously. So your son is, first of all, how old is he? You say he's an adult. How old is he?
Let's see. He's 23.
Okay. So he's a young adult, and he's at a time of his life right now, especially in that age group, where society is telling him that it's only weirdos, you know, superstitious weirdos who believe in God. Atheism is really fashionable right now. And so there's a lot of peer pressure in subtle ways for him to just sort of jettison belief in God. So understand, number one, that this is part of our culture. Now, it doesn't make it right, or it doesn't make it, you know, it's not as though you should say, oh, okay, well, in that case, everything's good, because it still is a problem.
Right.
But I would say, sizing up what you're dealing with here, you're dealing with the societal pressure now that's trying to move people away from belief in God. And it's being done in various ways. But the main thing is, he's experiencing that kind of pressure that didn't exist, not in a cultural sense, say 50 years ago, or even less than that. So what I would do is I would talk to him, and to the extent that you can, find out, okay, so what are some of the difficulties for you? You know, what is it that you're having difficulty believing in? And see what it is. And really, only until you know what some of these issues are will you know how to respond. But I have a feeling it's probably things like, well, I mean, you know, science demonstrates that God doesn't exist, or I don't think believing in God is compatible with science. Often these are, you know, kind of pseudoscientific arguments that people will use. But once you know a little bit more about what specifically is bothering him, then you can ask more questions about that. Now, there's some really good resources. Let me give, do you have a pen handy, Deanna? Because I want to give you a couple of resources.
I've already been jotting down. I'm ready.
Okay. Okay, good. So I would recommend a website called, I hope I'm going to get this right, it's Credible Catholic. And the Catholic priest behind this is a brilliant man, Father Robert Spitzer, S-P-I-T-Z-E-R. He's a brilliant
fan.
Oh, you're a big fan, so you know Father Spitzer. Okay, great. Well, I would recommend that particular website, Credible Catholic. And even if it's not something that you would give to your son, although you could, there's information there that you could assimilate, and then in your conversations with your son, you could share that with him. I also recommend the Aquinas Institute on YouTube. So Aquinas 101 is the series that they have on issues like how can I know that God exists? What are the rational evidences that God exists? Or what are the rational evidences that Jesus is God? Now, they have many topics, and they take a Thomistic approach, which is very helpful because St. Thomas was eminently clear. He was very compelling in the way he would make a point, argue a point. And it's very appealing, I think, to a modern audience because it's a way of looking at these big picture issues in a methodical, rational, consistent, logical way. And many people can't think that way anymore. So when they roll up to something like this that shows them in 8 or 9 minutes, typically that's how long these videos last, it's very appealing because you can wrap your mind around it. And they have like illustrations and other things, sound effects and other things going on. So it's interesting to watch, but the material, the concepts are very effective, very helpful. So perhaps you can begin to send him some of those. If I were you, I'd go over to the YouTube page for the Thomistic Institute, and you'll see there the Aquinas 101 videos. They have longer videos, but those are more in the form of like lectures. But it's the shorter ones. They have a kind of red motif. So when you see the ones that have kind of red in the drawings and things, those are the ones, I should say, that you want to zero in on. And as you peruse the different topics, you're going to run across some that talk about how can we know that God exists? What are the reasons to believe that God exists? And so on. And maybe start there. Then the last thing I'd suggest would be, it's a book that I co-authored with Kenneth Hensley. It's called The Godless Delusion. And in that book, what we do is we don't take the approach of trying to demonstrate the reasonableness for belief in God, but rather we take atheism and the atheist presuppositions and the worldview of atheism and what it entails, and we critique that. So it's a different way of approaching the topic, but if you were to absorb some of what's in that book, it's called The Godless Delusion. It's a riff on Richard Dawkins' book called The God Delusion. And his book sold many millions of copies and ours didn't. But in any case, it's kind of our response to that issue. And they're easy to master. For example, you can ask your son, I mean, if he's reached the point where he's a full-blown atheist, in some form or another, he's going to espouse the view that there is no such thing as a supernatural realm. There is no heaven or hell. There's no afterlife. There are no gods. There is no God that you think of as God. There are no angels or devils. You don't have a soul. You're not going anywhere after this life is over because everything that exists is material. Well, in this book, The Godless Delusion, what we demonstrate is how you can methodically, using that presupposition that's inherent to atheism, you can critique atheism by demonstrating that there are many things that atheists recognize that are real but immaterial. So love, for example, or your memory, knowledge, your human dignity, the whole idea of good and evil itself, the whole idea, for that matter, of truth. Truth is real. There is a real thing called truth, and we see truth in so many different things throughout the day, but it's not a physical thing, but it transcends the physical universe. So in the course of this book, what we do is we show you how you can take some of these basic building blocks of logic and reason and use them to deconstruct, to dismantle this ultimately incoherent worldview that is atheism. And it can't really account for those immaterial realities that we all know exist, but they don't exist in a physical form. So those would be some suggestions to get you started.
Well, I certainly appreciate the suggestions, and I definitely appreciate you and the entire Thank Relevant you. Radio. I've been a fan for quite a few years. This is my first time calling in, and I thank you so much because this thank is a topic you. Really close to my heart, and just want to make sure that I have the best information to try to help him if he seeks it from me.
You're a good mom, And I'm sure he loves you, even though he's kind of confused right now. And of course, I haven't said anything about prayer and the power of God's grace. That's the most powerful of all. These are all just tools that we can use in terms of reason. But your prayers as his mom, you're praying the rosary for him, and your patient persistence in asking God to bring him back, that's going to have the most powerful effect of all. So I don't mean to suggest only head stuff, because the prayer is even more important than that. But just keep the lines of communication open. I'm sure he loves you. He knows you love him. And keep at it. Yeah. Learn, and you'll be able to share these things with him. And if you can get him to start listening to this program, Deanna, maybe he'll start listening, and maybe I can help you with that.
I've suggested it a few times, so I just am waiting on him to be receptive.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah, wait on the timing that God has in store. And we will pray with you, Deanna, that your son will return to a practice of his faith and love of Jesus, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you. I'll be right back. Cyrus, are we starting hour three?
You got
Impossible.
It, man.
Oh, yep. Man. Okay, hour three coming right up.
Taco Tuesday. Taco Tuesday.